When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. On today's episode, myself and Tommy Dreamer break down AEW Dynamite. What are they doing with Mercedes Moné? And my God, we have a new Superman, and his name is Orange Cassidy. Also, Black Saturday, still being talked about in 2024. And who better to talk about it with than Hall of Famer Gerald Briscoe right now on the Busted Open Podcast. Tommy, I want to get into a little bit more when it comes to Mercedes. And you said something just before the break, and we had DDP on, about that you assume that they're setting up for the fans to just dislike Mercedes right now. It has to be, right, Tommy? I mean, I understand Mercedes came in with a lot of fanfare. We're going to see her in the ring for the first time at Double or Nothing going up against Willow Nightingale, but you would think that they're setting her up to be a heel, correct, Tommy?
I think, you know, when we've talked about this before with Tony, it's also like, hey, we kind of let the fans choose. I think the fans will choose to boo her from those promos. And it's been kind of a wait and see with her because she can't wrestle. Now we know when she's going to wrestle, what she's going to do. And I did enjoy her promo. I also enjoyed that she says she thrives when she is in the ring. And guess what? That's kind of truth. She always has pretty damn good matches. Look forward to that match. We love Willow. We're undecided / not liking Mercedes. So I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. They do have a story. They do have a history. They had a bit of a build that, you know, it's best that Mercedes went away just because, like we've discussed before, if you can't compete right now, why keep showing you? Her build was perfect, I thought, last night. She talked like, and what did she also refer to herself as? A bitch. And I think we're going to see that the CEO be a bitch and all the stuff with the money and all that stuff. You're going to have, you know, people, I feel, in that arena boo her out of the building, and rightfully so. And if you're a heel, you want that. Because when you also said she's the biggest heel in AEW. She's not. Christian is the biggest heel in the industry right now. And AEW is blessed to have him. If you listen, and younger wrestlers should listen to how he controlled a crowd, even when at times they were booing him, cheering him, how he turned it. And yes, it's the easy way to go the local hockey team, but he does it in a way better way. I also enjoyed that segment. I did not see that swerve coming. And then again, I said this whole show set a lot of good stuff up where when Christian comes to the back and he talks to Nicholas and Matthew, look forward to doing further business with you. Like I said, I 100% can see Christian as world champion. And not that it's taking away from Swerve's run, but there's some interesting aspects about this where, because people are like, oh, this will be, you know, an easy victory for Swerve. Not at all. This will get Swerve over to higher point of his career. Again, when we're talking about heels and baby faces, we are positioning Swerve as our top babyface champion, and it's working. So there's a lot of great setup to happen. And then for a setup, then you also need absolute execution. I never worry about stuff that's in the ring. I worry about the details. But so far, I like everything where it's going.
Yeah, and you said something again that's very interesting, Tommy, because you just said that with Tony Khan, he kind of throws his talent out there in some circumstances and lets the fans decide. You know, Tommy, you know, I've said, and I've been very critical when it comes to AEW, that a lot of times I don't know who are the baby faces and who are the heels. A lot of fans have come back to me and said, hey, we don't want to be force-fed who we're supposed to cheer for and who we're supposed to boo. We want to be able to choose ourselves. That's an interesting way to go about it, and I'll use Mercedes as that example. I don't think that Tony Khan got Mercedes thinking that, all right, she's going to be a heel. She brought her in. You know, there was a lot of fanfare about Mercedes coming in. Obviously, there was a lot of criticism when it came to the WWE, the way that Mercedes left, Sasha Banks left the WWE. I'm sure that the game plan was to have her be one of the biggest babyface wrestlers in the women's division. That is not the case right now. I was actually interested, Tommy. I wish that that backstage interview was out in front of the crowd, because I would love to have gauged what the crowd felt about Mercedes last night. You know, it was a pretty hot crowd. It was a pretty big crowd. I wonder if they would have cheered Mercedes or booed Mercedes. Because, man, it's the little things that Mercedes says that bothers the shit out of me. Here she is. She's talking about Willow and that she's 18 days away from, you know, making her AEW in-ring debut. And then she throws in there, but you know what? I'll be courtside at the Celtics game and, you know, this weekend, and I'll be throwing out the first pitch at the Red Sox game. It's like, all right, who gives a shit? You know, like, I'm only concerned about that match that you're having with Willow at Double or Nothing. She throws those little lines out there that gets under my skin. So I feel like you're right. When she makes her in-ring debut at Double or Nothing against Willow, she's going to get booed by that 7,000 or 8,000 people that are going to be in that arena that night.
If I take it from their past, Paige coming back, it was one of the greatest stories of all time.
Yeah.
We never thought we'd see her wrestle again. And she was coming in, and then promo turned her heel. And even where it was like, you know, it's how dare you say this is your house where you didn't do anything here, instantly turned her heel when we were supposed to make this woman a babyface. Then what did they do? They embraced it. And the other part where it's interesting, where you said last night you saw a different reaction with Serena Deeb when she came out there, and I thought her promo was awesome. Her and Shivani. And what did the fans start doing? Because they weren't really into it. They started chanting, "Let's go Oilers." And we had this uncomfortable moment where it's like, oh, these people are turning, which means they're not interested in what they're saying. And what did she do? She waited. And then she told her real life story about having seizures and all that stuff. And people are like, oh, we're assholes for doing that. But then they start chanting Toni Storm. And then when, you know, here comes Toni, they cheer her. When you put people out in front of the audience, it could change. And you have to be able to, I thought Serena Deeb handled herself like a professional. And the crowd's going to like who they like. The end of it, when she knocked out Toni Storm and Toni Storm played it. Why? Because Toni Storm is such an over-the-top character. I said the same thing with Chelsea Green. Chelsea Green, and then I watched it with last night, two nights ago, and I was like, there is her perfect Robin, Ariana Grace. That's the pairing you need.
Yep.
Because you now have somebody, or at least put that all three women together, because you have like a person who's totally buying in to what this woman is saying. Back to live audience. A live audience can change you in a heartbeat. If that was out there, I don't know if you would get that. I also don't know if Mercedes Moné was actually there. You know, that could have been done last week. But what I'm saying is, if you, I don't know if it has that reaction with her, if she's out there, because it was a very, very good delivered promo. But in front of a live audience, you may, I don't know how that you'd react to that. Or I'm not saying you, I'm saying her, Mercedes Moné.
Yeah, with Mercedes, I don't know. That's a great question, because you just talked about Serena Deeb. Another one, you know, was Christian. When Christian, you know, Christian was getting those let's go Oiler chants, and he just drove right through it to the point where it just died down, because the fans are like, all right, he's not reacting to this at all. It's not throwing him off at all. He's not pausing to let us get the words in. So it just stopped, because Christian wouldn't let it, you know, impend his momentum at all. So he just went, he drove straight through those chants, and finally the fans just kind of gave up on it because it wasn't working. I don't know how those chants would have been with Mercedes. I have a feeling you're probably right, Tommy. If Mercedes cut that promo in front of a live crowd, you probably get those let's go Oiler chants, because I have not yet once heard Mercedes on the microphone in AEW be real at all. It's extremely on the surface. It's extremely like, feels like WWE overscripted promos. Like, I don't get any kind of like real emotion from Mercedes at all. Even when she's trying to be emotional, it comes off just forced, or it comes off fake. Like last night where she's like, Am I down? Do I think I can't do it? Well, of course not. You know, I'm Mercedes Moné, and in 18 days, I'm going to wipe that smile off of Willow Nightingale's face. It's like, ugh, that sounds so fake and so scripted. It's so on the surface. It's got to be the fact that she's trying to get these fans to go against her. At least I hope it is. Because if she's really trying to get the fans to rally behind her, it ain't working. It ain't working.
Well, like I said, time will tell when she walks out there. I think she'll get a star reaction when she goes out there. Mm-hmm. And I think she'll get the people behind her into the match with her and Willow. But I do think she will be the heel in this. And, you know, it's 17 days away to see what happens. On the other part of that, you could also kind of lean into that. Look at Jericho, man. Jericho is a master. The wave, the thanking people, the passive aggressiveness of Chris Jericho, the over the top in his promos are getting him over. Because what was it like 3 weeks ago? Everyone was saying, please retire and boo. And now you're all in on it. Where he has manipulated it because he's so great, and putting Big Bill with him as well. And I would like to see two more people and have a group. Why you're not going to do it now? Because you have a group called the Elite, and they're the top people. Leave Jericho with Big Bill right now, because now, like, you know, I've said forever, Jericho can reinvent himself in an instant, and he already has by tapping into that stuff. And he did, and it worked, because we're no longer saying the things that we were saying, and we're like, and I'm even hearing people cheer for him, and even him thanking them, it was like, you're idiots, because that's what he wanted.
But I love the fact, too, because obviously a lot of people on social media is like, Jericho's on my TV every week. Give that TV time to somebody
else. I'd love to be there for the next 2 hours. I love it.
Like, he's like, I know, for the people saying that, you know, I'm on here every single week. I'm making an appearance every week and complaining. I'm complaining too. I want to be on here the whole 2 hours. Like, that was perfect. Like, he's so good at this very small things. Like you said, the waving, it's perfect, because you're right. What he's eventually going to do, Tommy, he's going to turn everybody around. You're seeing it already. there's people that it's just impossible for them to boo Jericho. Why? Because he's getting over, whether it's getting over as a babyface or getting over as a heel. What Jericho always does, he gets his character over, and he's getting the learning tree over. Again, something that sounds so outrageous, he's getting it over in a big way. And eventually, it's gonna get everybody else over that's with him.
Wishing Hook the best of luck in his recovery. Can't wait to see ya. Like, all that stuff is phenomenal. Like, so that's why I lean into it. I thought this was a great show to set everything up for where you want to go. And there is a lot of really, really good stuff where you want to go.
Yo, what's going on? This is Bully Ray from Busted Open on SiriusXM's Fight Nation. For 15 years, we've brought you the best pro wrestling talk on the planet. And now, we're bringing you even more. Yo, guys, welcome to Busted Open After Dark. Every Wednesday night, as soon as AEW Dynamite ends, I'm bringing you instant reactions with the Busted Open Nation. The only place to party on Wednesday nights is Busted Open After Dark with me, Uncle Bully. Download it on Apple, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are in France. Which means Tubi is more popular than cigarettes for breakfast. It's more popular than considering iced coffee a total abomination. More popular than loving political revolutions. More popular than mère and mère somehow being different words. Tubi, it's more popular than being French. See you in there.
Skip the waiting room. TireRack.com now offers convenient mobile tire installation in select areas. Simply shop TireRack.com for your next set of tires, and at checkout, choose Tire Rack Mobile Tire Installation. An expertly trained technician will arrive with your tires and install them on site, at home, at the office, wherever you are. You'll spend less time waiting and more time doing the things you enjoy. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
Looking for a new show to dive into? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like the full season of FX's epic limited series Shogun, FX's new international spy thriller The Veil, starring Emmy and Golden Globe winner Elizabeth Moss. And don't miss the all-new crime series Under the Bridge, inspired by shocking true events and starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
The best part of spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/bustedopen. That's mintmobile.com/bustedopen. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/bustedopen. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I got to tell you, Sean, you ain't wrong when it comes to Orange Cassidy. Like, even the beatdown, like the beatdown after the match, Tommy, and then it ends, the segment ends with him standing with the chair. Like, I mean, you don't need to sell me on Orange Cassidy. It's Beretta you need to sell me on. Like, wouldn't it have helped the story if you would have had Trent Beretta beat Orange Cassidy last night in that match? I mean, what the hell is it going to take to beat Orange Cassidy, for crying out loud? I mean, Sean, I can't argue with you at all, Sean. I think it's a good call. It's a lot, Tommy. It's a lot for me to swallow here.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Listen, baby faces need to get their asses kicked and to sell. I disagree about stretcher jobs. We have way too many people. Then we had Tony Khan, we had Kenny Omega, and now it would be Orange Cassidy. If this was the Young Bucks doing it, 1,000%. because they're taking out people that they're targeting. That is a thing. But this is, again, a whole other story with Trent and Orange Cassidy and former best friends, Chuck Taylor, Statlander, Rocky Romero. They're telling all these different stories. Listen, your baby faces need to get their asses handed to them and then eventually come back and fight. And yes, you need to stay down and sell. That's 101. Where they're going to go, we all know Orange Cassidy is a great wrestler. We all know he's less gimmicky now, which is what got him over. I do think where he was, he did need to progress. We do know that he's a great wrestler. We do know all those things that established him as this great character. I think in last night's particular case, being stretchered out, laid out, showed the different side for Trent, and you need that to show that by your baby face being laid out. And if I could use examples from the past, there was a 6'8", 302-pound man named Hulk Hogan who would sell when a guy beat his ass, because eventually he's going to come back and kick that person's ass.
I mean, I hear you, Tommy, but like last night it was just, he got a pile driver on top of the steel steps and then was catapulted head first into the frame of the ring. And then 5 seconds later, he scrambles to his feet and has got a chair in his hand. I'm sorry, man. You got to give me something to buy into. Cause now it's like, all right, then how the hell are you going to beat an Orange Cassidy? He got pile drove on top of the steel steps and then catapulted into the frame of the ring. And then he just scrambles and gets back on his feet. I mean, come on, man. I mean, I don't buy into the whole, I hate generalizing and say in AEW, there's no selling, because that's not true, because we do see selling in AEW. But that's a little bit too much for me, Tommy, because now, and it's kind of the way sometimes when I saw the Young Bucks, now when I see Orange Cassidy, I just turn my brain off, because now I know that anything that I see, I'm not going to be able to buy into it. And I think last night definitely was an example of that. Now, when I see Orange Cassidy, I automatically turn my brain off, because now I'm not going to buy into anything that I see happening in the middle of the fucking ring.
Yep. I mean, the King of Memphis, Jerry Lawler, would get his ass, and he was a god. Like I said, last night there was just a bit of a disconnect, because the story is more about Trent. Then we know Orange Cassidy is tough. We know he can go through a lot. But then vulnerability. Yeah. John Cena, who, you know, to the caller point, there's a lot of us, and I'm not a size person, but there's a big difference between a John Cena and an Orange Cassidy, physical wise. There's a big difference between Rey Mysterio and Orange Cassidy. Rey Mysterio is a Hall of Famer, all these things. Why? He works from underneath. And Rey's probably more jacked proportionately than Orange Cassidy. Body-wise, Rey's just shorter. But what I'm saying is you get more from being the underdog if you're an Orange Cassidy, as opposed to being, top Hulk Hogan type of character.
I mean, I didn't buy into Orange Cassidy beating, you know, what was it, Shane Taylor a couple weeks ago. And then, like, he used the Superman punch, and everybody's, like, comparing it to fucking Roman Reigns. I'm sorry. I'm not comparing the Orange Cassidy punch to Roman Reigns' Superman punch. Sorry, not doing it. There's a big difference between Roman Reigns and fucking Orange Cassidy, who's 125 pounds soaking wet. I'm sorry. I mean, I know pro wrestling at times, you got to use your imagination. That's a little bit too much for me, Tommy. And again, like, what's the flaw in Shane Taylor beating an Orange Cassidy? What's the flaw in Beretta getting the best of Orange Cassidy last? Like, all right, you want to have Orange Cassidy win the match? Okay. But couldn't Beretta just leave him in a lump in the middle of the ring with that beatdown afterwards, so that we feel, like you said, a little sympathy towards Orange Cassidy? Guy's fucking Superman. Nothing can keep Orange Cassidy down. I mean, come on. Jeez.
Like Superman, then you got to find your kryptonite.
Yeah. Well, it's not fucking getting pile driven at the top of the steel steps. Fucking guy bounced right back up like it was made of rubber. Orange Cassidy's fucking soup. He's Popeye. Fucking have him eat spinach before every match. Then maybe I'll buy into it a little bit more. Jeez Louise. There's only so much I could take as a fucking wrestling fan. That's a little bit too much for me. Dear God.
The Busted Open Podcast is now available on YouTube. This is Dave LaGreca, host of Busted Open, the number one pro wrestling show on the planet. You can now watch and listen to the award-winning Busted Open Podcast every single day on YouTube. Our best interviews, behind-the-scenes access, and some of our best content from the past. All available right now when you go to youtube.com/@BustedOpenPodcast. Subscribe right now.
I'm sorry, Mr. Briscoe, but it is the topic of today, the documentary that dropped on Tuesday on Black Saturday. And, you know, I put it to bed. I closed the book on one of the most awful chapters of my childhood in pro wrestling. But, you know, the documentary kind of reopened the wound a little bit, so we wanted to have you on. But before I introduce you, obviously, the host for Stories with Briscoe and Bradshaw, that's available wherever you get your podcast. Hall of Famer, in multiple Hall of Fames, by the way. We bring in Mr. Gerald Briscoe. Sir, thank you so much for the time, as always, and appreciate you coming on.
Well, Dave, I'm sure appreciate you having me on. I remember when I first met you, you told me you're Hayford for me for selling out to Vince McMahon, but you really didn't know the true story. And I got to give Dark Side credit. You know, they dug deep, and they did a great job of producing the thing. Of course, there were a couple of issues I wish they would have expounded on a little bit more, but they didn't, you know, and maybe we'll have a part two on that. But man, it's good to see you. And it's always good to see my friend Tommy Dreamer there with that big smile on his face. Smile,
absolutely.
Tommy.
I love you, Mr. Briscoe. You know, how about I was thinking of this when you say what Dave said about you, how much a hatred for us, the first time that we ever met. I never met somebody that wanted to fight me right off the bat because we met live on television at the pay-per-view in your house. And when ECW invaded, and I was like, you know, we were all so trepidatious. And when I saw your eyes, I was like, oh my God, Jerry Briscoe wants to fight for real. What are we going to do here? And like, but I was like, I never met somebody that I'm so like, I love and respect and close to. And then, but our first initial meeting, you wanted to kill me because I was interrupting your show.
Well,
Dave thought that's what you did to him.
We can blame at Bruce Pritchard on that there, Tommy. You know, and Paul Heyman. Let's don't let Paul out of the doghouse either.
It's always safe to blame Bruce and Paul. They're normally the root of most of our problems.
You think there's room in their house for more blame? You know, that we could give. All, I mean, they get blamed for every damn thing. You know, they get blamed for overcooked boiled eggs sometimes too. You know, but Tommy, you know, you and I become really really close friends. At least I've become. However that goes, but always a pleasure to see you. I saw you in Tampa not long ago. Yes, with Royal Rumble and also at WrestleMania. Always good. We had Francine, the great Francine, on our podcast today, this week.
That's cool.
Stories with Briscoe. And of course, yeah, your name came up several times there, you know, as a leader with that ECW there, and a tremendous job that you've done throughout your career.
Well, thank you. So you liked how everything was. I thought it was one of the better Dark Sides that I've seen. I felt it was historically factual, but then there were just less like some stuff. And Dave and I were talking before that, like that we wish they would have went on a little bit more about, or then there was just certain throwaways that like Vince buying out Ole Anderson's stock when he didn't have to. Was like something that's really to be talked about. And then, you know, I thought Jim Cornette had a great representation. I thought Dave Meltzer had great representation, as well as for you, because I mean, you were a key guy in all of that. And you felt the same way about the documentary?
I basically felt the same way. I would just, I'd sit back and I chuckled. Hear Jim Cornette and Dave Meltzer on the same damn show. I mean, how many times are you going to get that anywhere, you know?
They could have thrown Vince Russo in there. Would have been the ultimate.
Oh, man, I wish they would have just for spite, you know, for the two of them there, you know. It'd been true. But, yeah, I thought the guys, they came down on my home about a year ago, actually, and did this thing, interviewed me. And they were on the way up to interview Ole Sun, which I thought did a tremendous job, too, without having any experience, you know, on the air. And I thought he did. He represented his family really, really well. And you know, of course, Jimmy and the other guys that was on there, I thought they produced it very well. As we discussed before, there's always a couple of things you wish that they would just hit on a little bit heavier. But, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll do a part two, which that could certainly stretch into a two-part series there, too.
What was something that you wish they would have expanded on a little bit more?
Well, you know, in the beginning, the big deal that really saved our butts was the no sell clause in there, that you had to offer your stock to another stockholder before it was sold to anybody.
Right.
And when we found out about that, we made sure we called Barnett, who was a stockholder at the time, and said, hey, you want to buy? Or no, I don't want to buy that damn stock. I want to get rid of mine. And I kind of let a light in my mind there, you know, to go back to Jim on that. And so, and we offered it to the Crockett's. We offered it to Crockett Associates, the Murnicks that ran Raleigh and Richmond and all that stuff. So we did our due diligence on our bylaws and what we should have. When Bill Watts sold Ole Anderson his shares of stock, nobody else was ever offered those shares. I mean, I didn't even know Ole was a partner until later on, and you know, I don't know how much longer after they sold the stock, but it's quite some time before I even knew Ole was a business partner of mine. And so, but when Ole sued to stop the sale, that was one of the things he stopped the sale on. And so when we did our deposition and our testimony, we said, well, when Ole bought his stock, we were out in the cold on that, because my brother and I would both bought those shares from Bill in a heartbeat, because we were planning on things to happen a little bit later on. And so the judge, when the arbitrator wasn't in a court, but whoever you know decided, that was saying the arbitrator saw that Ole bought his stock, you know, and it was not solicited to other stockholders, and we solicited our stocks, he just said, hey, man, this is, you know, he threw the whole damn thing out of court at that time there, and we won, and the sale was able. But if that hadn't happened like that, we would have never been able to sell our stock, because Ole, a very, very bright guy. There's no doubt about Ole, the bright guy. But, you know, he underestimated his opponents for this occasion here. And Jack and I, Jack especially, was very sharp on those type of rules and reading into that stuff there. And it kind of saved the day for us there. So that's one of the things. And I right off the top of my head, I can't, as we go along, I'll probably remember the other one there. But
And one thing that was brought up, Tommy, and I didn't realize it, but, you know, I converted Mr. Briscoe because I was such a big fan of Georgia Championship Wrestling, all my VHS tapes, because I would tape it every week, to DVD. And I was going back and watching a lot of the Georgia Championship Wrestling from 1984, and I was thinking about it, and then it was mentioned on the documentary how it really did fall off from 82 to 84. There was a big drop off, like talent wise, in Georgia Championship Wrestling, which should have been, I guess, at that time, a bit of a red flag. But you guys started to lose a lot of talent, even before Vince McMahon came and pushed it nationally. So, you know, you did notice how things, I guess, when talent drops off, attendance and TV viewership is going to drop off as well, correct?
That's absolutely correct. And the other issue while we were talking there was, as we were going along there, we started losing talent. You know, we were losing not really you know, the best talent. But when we lost Hot Rod, when we lost Roddy Piper, to me and my brother Jack, that was a tipping point of, you know, which way the battle was going to go, because Piper was so hot. He was right there with Hogan during that time frame, you know, from WTBS, you know. So we saw what happened with Piper when he left. And, you know, the thing about it is, you know, the other thing I wanted to mention was the oath that we took. You know, only took an oath too, that he would pay my brother and I X amount of dollars. Well, business got so bad that he wasn't able to pay those X amount of dollars. But Ole was drawing three different salaries, and plus a salary from Jim Crockett, you know. So, but during, when he dropped us from the payroll there, he didn't take a pay deduction himself, you know, to compensate for the thing. So he was still getting his full allotment of Georgia Championship Wrestling money, but he had cut us off and another partner off of receiving our funds. So that was the second issue. I wish they would have expounded on a little bit more, but yeah, it was quite an episode.
I thought a very profound statement was one. Like with Vince, Turner was just going to get rid of him in a year anyway, because that's, he had that option. So it was kind of like a year of just chaos with, you know, this program being on, but then he was going anyway, basically made $1 million off of nothing.
Yeah. Well, Vince knew that too. When we were closing out, Tommy, Vince was saying that, I'm not going to have this thing long. Because I, you know, being a businessman, you always ask for just a little bit more than what you're getting when you're finally sitting down at the table and negotiating. And something else they left out, Linda McMahon, during that negotiation, she was the bell cow on this thing. I mean, she was one really hot into this thing, negotiating the terms and the conditions of it. So, you know, she deserved a lot of credit for it, I think more so. And I, like I said, I was asking for more. That's when Vince said, hey, you know, I'm not going to have this thing. I bought your Florida sock, which is left out, you know, which he did have to do also. But what you brought up, I believe, Tommy, was him buying Ole stock when he definitely did not have to pay Ole a red penny for that sock at the time he bought it there. So.
And then, you know, basically, like, in Dave and I talked about when Southwest Wrestling, we didn't view that as a takeover because it really wasn't. They couldn't afford to pay the bill. Vince stepped up, showed his product. And then, you know, when I was saying the one thing that really stood with me with Vince was going to lose this after a year, use that money to help fund WrestleMania, which is very good business-wise. But then the other part of it is, like, he has this. He's trying to get all these assets out there, which kind of worked. But then, like, I wish they would have also shown what happened afterwards with both the territory and stuff. But the biggest thing was cable television killed the territories.
Wow.
Somebody else was going to jump in on it. And Vince was the only person who had that foresight to do it before anybody.
Yeah. And you're exactly right on that, Tom. And what everybody was saying, you know, that Georgia was doing well, but as you guys brought up, we were starting to drop. Business was starting to drop. We were starting to lose talent, and we couldn't afford to bring guys in and, you know, starcadic sort of, as a loose term for another word there, to have our stars on TV that we had. So our house shows had started to drop, so – you know, our income, of course, was dropping, and talent wasn't really wanting to make that trip because that was a miserable day. You had to get up like 6 a.m. in the morning to be at WTBS on Techwood Avenue, I believe it was, to cut the show about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. Then you had to make two other shows that day, so that was a miserable show. Guys weren't wanting to do that because they weren't making the money as they were before. I mean, that was a great weekend for a lot of guys coming in from all over the nation. We had guys coming, the superstars coming in. That's what really helped build that brand, was the variety of stars that we had coming in across the nation.
And I also remember,
correct. Hang on 1 second, Dave. Sorry. You'd had to work three times on that day, correct? You'd have to do TV, then do either Columbus, and then back to the Omni, right?
Well, no, but back to a house show. It was a little, okay. And they were small house shows too. They weren't like Atlanta. They were suburbs of Atlanta, which was nice because you're only 50, 60 miles away from home. You know, on a Saturday night, you could still get home on a decent time on a Saturday night. But it was a miserable day. I mean, your day started around 6 a.m. in the morning. It wasn't over until about midnight or 1 a.m. that night.
I guess you could never really foretell what it was going to be like. But were you surprised that it was such a colossal failure that the WWF programming went on at 6:05 and it was rejected as much as it was by the audience?
It was rejected big time. And I was surprised in the beginning, but after, you know, you start watching those shows, and I mean, our show, that's a funny thing about those old TV shows. I mean, they were jobber shows. They were enhancement shows, you know. We would be on against a tag team you never saw before, you know, and they were enhancement guys. And the talent that we flew in were against enhancement. So we really, maybe we'd throw one exciting match in there, but that whole shebang was built on enhancement talent getting to the top stars over, which they did a tremendous job with. So,
also reading Steve Kern's book, which I just finished, a very, very great read.
Steve's a great writer, and he's got great insight.
But it's also same thing with you. Once you're settling the houses, and when he was a partner in Florida, and then he's just getting this cash, and his father-in-law is like, what is, you know, because he's didn't have the business acumen that he had, they just hand me cash. So then, like, even for you to say, I'm getting all these receipts, they're not adding up, and because it's a cash business, and it's so much to, like, just make some different cash disappear. So, I mean, and again, this is your livelihood. This is how you're feeding your family on top of wrestling. Like, I mean, it's you have to be that meticulous. And thankfully, you saw it.
Well, I was blessed because I had a pretty good education in Oklahoma, and through Oklahoma State University, through business, I studied a lot of business courses, and being in business down here at my body shop. And that's where, you know, Ole and I had a disagreement. He said, you don't understand how business, well, I've been running a business for 15 years, you know, and I knew, and I was a partner in Florida Championship Wrestling. I knew how you set up a show. I know. When we first, and he was completely right on this end of it, when we first went into those Ohio and Michigan and West Virginia, you know, they were places that the old Sheik was in, and Sheik had scorched earth them. He had ripped off every building manager in that tri-state area there. So when we went in, we had to put deposits up front. Yeah. But you run two or three shows with these buildings, and Tommy, you know this, that when you run two or three shows, you gain that trust of the building manager. So then your show that night is paying for the next show. So you don't have to take out a bundle of money like we were. And Ole was using that as an, we don't have the money because we got to prepay all this bull stuff. Well, you didn't have to prepay it because I was running those West Virginia, Ohio, Michigan shows. I was doing a settlement for each and every one of those shows. So I knew I was leaving the deposit there. When I left that night, I was leaving the deposit for the next month's show there. So all that was BS too.
Did you ever keep any of these journals or ledgers?
You know, Tommy, I'm such a fool. I don't have any equipment that I had during my wrestling days. When I quit, I had a bonfire out my lake house there, and I burnt every thing on my boots, my tights, my jackets, everything. And Jack threw his in the lake, you know, when he retired. So, but the only journals I have is some real late Florida when I left Florida. I was doing the booking there. Me and Dusty were doing the booking here, and I have some of those journals. And I have, of course, all my WWE when I was doing the booking. With Vince, I have all those journals still.
Sitting on a gold mine, Mr. Briscoe, on a gold mine.
I've been up in my attic a couple of times, and man, that's a worth some money, but when, you know?
Right.
Hate is a strong emotion. How much, you know, did that relationship between Ole Anderson and Jim Barnett really kind of just destroy the relationship and really ultimately destroy Georgia Championship Wrestling?
Great question. I mean, the hate, I never knew Jim Barnett, even with Ole bullying him and threatening him and threatening him, throwing him off balconies of his condo and actually breaking into his office and going through his personal stuff and all that stuff. The hate was more on Ole's side towards Jim. And Jim was a very sensitive person. He was very upset about all that. So the hate factor, especially on Ole's part, the revenge part of it. Barnett was a businessman. Barnett made a deal, and it was done, and it was over with, and all the flim-flam on the backside was over with. So after Barnett, we made this deal. Barnett never spoke. I mean, he never had any hate for him. He had fear of Ole, which he should have, because Ole at times could go off the wall and intimidate. That was Ole's main factor, was intimidation. And there you got a 155-pound elderly gentleman that had never been around a bunch of roughing, or he'd been around them, but never been threatened like he was threatened by Ole. So it was in there.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, you hear those stories, and it almost, like, even something like the pocket knife when you're making the oath, like, it sounds just unbelievable. Well,
that wasn't true. There was no pocket. Only had that was the big deal about it. And anybody that knows my brother knows that he never got juice in his entire career. I only did one time in my career. I got juice. So he and I were always afraid of diseases and germs and stuff like that. And so what it was, we were looking for, none of us had a knife, you know. And so, well, we had a butter knife, you know. You're not going to gig yourself with a butter knife. So what we ended up doing, you know, of course, those little disposable razors that we had, we did the old school thing. You know, we broke up one of those things where two little razors in it and broke the razor, and Ole gigged his head. Well, Jack, when I'm not gigging my head. If my word's not good enough for you, Ole, we're not good enough to be partners. So what we ended up doing, we ended up poking our fingers, you know, so that's where our juice came from. But that was in the, you know, it was like, what are we, teenagers? Here we are, businessmen discussing a $1 million deal, and we're doing the teenage stuff here, or preteen stuff to each other.
Knowing you and knowing your weak stomach, yeah. I was like, there's no way Jerry did that. I forgot to ask you that, but at least you covered that, which, yeah. You know, but that's also the sensationalism of kind of what the show.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes does. So
the illustration, they got the guy bending over gagging himself and gushing out.
Yeah. I'm glad you cleared that up, because that just sounded like, just like, why would anybody ever do that? That just sounds ridiculous. Yeah. But you know what? Like, obviously, I put this to rest a long time ago, because I think you're absolutely right. If it wasn't Georgia Championship Wrestling, it would have been something else. Cable TV kind of killed off the territory era. And you know what? I know for you, it's Green Saturday, which is good. Green is good. But, you know, it's always going to be, you know, it's always going to be that pro wrestling memory, because I know it sounds ridiculous. And I mentioned this to you before, because I was a kid. I really thought that the WWF moved to Georgia. I was like, they moved to Georgia. They took over Georgia Championship Wrestling. That's my mindset as a 13-year-old kid. But Mr. Briscoe, thank you so much, as always, for the time. It's going to be a period of history that here we are in 2024, and we're still talking about it. So it's pretty crazy. But thank you so much. Again, the podcast, you have to listen. Stories with Briscoe and Bradshaw. Mr. Hall of Famer himself, Mr. Jerry Briscoe. Sir, thank you so much for the time. As always, we truly appreciate it.
Always great to share time with my friend, Jerry.
Love you, Mr. Briscoe. Thank
you. Love you guys, too.
Busted Open is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast. Catch the full 3 hours of Busted Open every day of the week at 9 a.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Foundation, channel 156. Go to SiriusXM.com/BustedOpenTrial to start your free trial today.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go, That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on, and if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.